This week, we're presenting The Intersection, a series that explores change in the Bay Area from the vantage point of just one street corner. KALW's David Boyer spent many months with the people who spend their time near Golden Gate and Leavenworth in San Francisco's Tenderloin District. Today, we'll hear why the neighborhood has resisted gentrification for so long and why the Tenderloin will never be the next Mission.
How's it going?
You need some coffee, man?
I got fresh pot up in 3.5 minutes. Are you in a hurry?
I've worked in coffee shops since I was 18. I don't really know how to do anything else except make coffee, so my options are pretty limited. My name is Brett Walker, and I own a coffee shop called George and Lenny, which is on Golden Gate between Hyde and Leavenworth.
Welcome back to The Intersection. So what changes a corner or a neighborhood? When is change an improvement and when is it not? In this episode, we're getting beyond the gentrification is bad narrative and looking at the complexities of change. We start in a cafe a half a block from Golden Gate and Leavenworth. It's got reclaimed industrial touches and a barista with a really long, bushy beard. In many now upscale neighborhoods across the country, that new cafe was the first sign of things to come. A year ago, the owner Brett leased this spot in San Francisco's Tenderloin, and he opened his doors to customers 6 months ago. He wanted to build something for himself, his girlfriend, and his 8-year-old daughter,
she's 75,
who just happens to be working the register today.
I had spent time in the Tenderloin, but after being here every day, it is like the Wild West. It's surprising to me that it's just complete chaos down here, you know? It's just you sit here all day and these dudes out here are just selling drugs all day long.
While this isn't the norm on many blocks in the Tenderloin, it is part of Brett's everyday reality.
I run out of change. I go across the street and I'm drug dealer's here's a stack of 20s. Can I get some fives? And it's the cops show up and they're like, well, you do know this is a Tenderloin. You're like, oh no, I had no idea. I just signed a 10-year lease on a business and expected to show up and it'd be the marina.
Even though Brett doesn't want to gentrify the neighborhood, it's the promise of change and development that lured him here.
A year ago, a friend brought me here, and he worked for the city, and so he had a decent understanding of what was going on in the area as far as new construction and people moving in and out and kind of what might transpire in the Tenderloin in the next few years.
He's seen it happen before. When he worked at Four Barrel Coffee, one of those San Francisco coffee roasters with a cult-like following.
If you go to the Mission and you see where Four Barrel is on Valencia, across from the projects, I moved here 6 years ago. That's a vastly different block now compared to then. Back in the day at Four Barrel, people would steal their tips or whatever. That never happens anymore, you know?
In many ways, it's hard to envision Golden Gate becoming the next Valencia Street, but there are signs that the neighborhood may be reaching a tipping point. A nearby dive bar is currently being converted into an upscale lounge and a Chinese takeout joint into a small plates restaurant. At the same time, the median rent for a one-bedroom in the Tenderloin rose 36% last year, far more than any other neighborhood in the city. And Brett's cafe is on the ground floor of one of the neighborhood's priciest properties, the Lofts at 7, where studios now go for over $3,000 a month. But it's not just the lofts and cafes that have neighbors thinking change is afoot. There's been talk about what might be coming to the empty storefront on the northeast corner of Golden Gate and Leavenworth. That's where the Big Boy Market used to be. The store was a notorious trouble spot, according to Kim Jackson and Mike Anderer, who work nearby.
The Big Boy Market, unfortunately, had become a center for negative activity. People were selling stolen property, they were selling drugs inside the market. It was bad.
There was frequently fights that would break out.
It did not go unnoticed by Jason Chernis, then captain of the Tenderloin Police Station.
Some of the clerks were playing both sides of the fence. They'd hold money for the drug dealers, and it was just a beehive of criminal activity around that location. Complaints every day. We've had enough. So finally we started asking people, hey, send us an email with your name on it and tell us exactly what you're seeing. So we started flooding the city attorney's office with these emails, and then he finally said, you know what, I have enough material here to file a lawsuit against you for a public nuisance.
Eventually, the store owner just decided to close up shop, which we considered a really big win. And there was an immediate change in the level of activity on that corner.
Now something new is going in there.
Imagine the polar opposite of a violent, drug-infested corner store across from a middle school and a childcare center. That's pretty much the nonprofit 826 Valencia. It's a writing and tutoring center in the Mission, co-founded by author Dave Eggers. But you wouldn't know it's a tutoring center if you were just walking by. That's because the front is a pirate supply shop where you can buy peg legs, eye patches, and all your pirate needs. Founded in 2002, before a tsunami of high-end retail transformed the Mission, 826 was started specifically to help the neighborhood's Latino kids. Many were growing up in Spanish-speaking monolingual homes and falling behind in reading and writing. The Curio Shop / Tutoring Center now serves more than 6,000 kids a year from all over the city. It has become a national nonprofit with centers across the country. And a year or so ago, they began to think about what's next in San Francisco.
I'm Dave Eggers, the co-founder of 826 Valencia. As a mission, 826 from the beginning has been to go deeper in this city. And Beta identified the next place that there was great need there and there wasn't a similar center.
My name is Beta Nazarian and I'm the executive director of 826 Valencia. Our volunteers have to get there and believe in serving the community there. So we asked our volunteers, where else would you travel to support kids who are in our focal group, so low-income students of color? And the Tenderloin was by far the highest, the most interest.
While a quarter of Latino families have moved out or been displaced from the Mission since 826 opened its doors, the Tenderloin's Hispanic population has increased by more than 50%. And the neighborhood is home to nearly 4,000 children.
This is a neighborhood where kids aren't seen that often, so people assume that there aren't that many kids, but there are so many families. And those kids have, you know, to some extent been underserved.
We spent the last year meeting folks in the neighborhood and raising money and looking for a space.
And in San Francisco's hot real estate market, that presented a challenge because they needed to find something accessible, affordable, and big enough.
A number of the landlords are prospecting that everything will go up so quickly, right? They want to make a buck. And so, you know, we just kept looking.
Eventually, they were put in touch with the man who owns the building on the corner where the Big Boy Market used to be.
My name is Paul Boschetti, and I own the 172 Golden Gate.
Originally, he didn't want to rent to a nonprofit.
There is enough nonprofit in the Tenderloin.
But his broker wouldn't let it go.
He called me, said, the director of this outfit want to talk to you. Just let's go and talk to them. Just you don't have to rent it to them. I said, okay, I'll go and talk to them.
I mean, his eyes couldn't have been wider as he walked through our pirate supply store and he saw children and adults sitting side by side, learning and working and writing. I mean, I think it kind of shifted his view of what could happen next.
I thought to myself, if I was a young kid, I think I would like something like that myself.
Then it was time for Dave and Beta to visit Paul's building at Golden Gate and Leavenworth. Aside from the infamous Big Boy Market, which only rented a fraction of the space, the ground floor has been largely vacant for 20 years. It had been the headquarters for the United Artists Theater chain until the late 1980s. And before that, it was home to a gay bar, an upscale lounge, a Filipino restaurant, a film archive, and more. But that was a long time ago.
You know, I went to look at it, and it was a really interesting place because it hasn't been changed in decades. It's a Warren-like space with all these little weird rooms that have been built ad hoc over the years for different reasons, and the space is 5,000 square feet, but it's probably subdivided 30 times.
When you walk through, it smells like grossness. I don't have I just remember I stopped inhaling as I was walking through. the bathrooms are like filled with grime, you know, parts of the walls are missing. We saw a hook that was probably weighed half a ton. It's a very inhospitable space. So you look at that plus the street activity on the corner and you say, wow, can anybody make the impact, right? Is that even a realistic hope?
That became pretty inspiring to think that we could transform a trouble spot into a place of hope.
I was surprised by how quick everybody was to support us. I was. The mayor's office, they'll text me, like literally text me every few weeks and say, did you sign a lease yet?
I think that there was some pressure from the city that they, friendly pressure, saying this is the right thing.
The lease was signed, and just days later, the mayor's Office of Economic Development held an event right in front of the still empty storefront. To kick off the festivities, students from nearby DeMariac Academy read poems that they wrote about their neighborhood.
You see a beige building with broken windows and stained walls. I see a mom taking care of her four children, saving all her money for their future. You see a gloomy neighborhood, scary and stained. I see a hopeful community, learning and living.
Mayor Ed Lee was also there.
Well, I'm just hanging out in the Tenderloin. You know, but I do want to say that the Tenderloin has deserved investment for so many decades, and we are on the brink of seeing a lot of community-level investment that's coming in from a city that, in many ways, is very successful, but has to make sure we share that prosperity with all of our neighbors. And I can't think of a more deserving community, and to have 826 Valencia is just an incredible blessing. Thank you. Thank you to the property owner for being visionary. Thank you to the leadership of Valencia to be here. Woo! Woo!
826 is making a long-term investment in the corner. They've signed a 20-year lease, and they're moving much of their staff from Valencia Street to the Tenderloin location. The space will be completely transformed by a $1.2 million renovation, with much of the work donated by local builders, artists, and architects.
At first, Bita held a workshop. She asked the kids what their ideas were. You know, they had 1,000 ideas and stuff, but the best one among them was a tree fort in the middle of the space, which has very low ceilings right now, but they're actually 16-foot ceilings. So we all got attached to that, and that built sort of the framework for like the idea that the whole space would be about exploring, whether it's this planet or other planets, whether it's some deserted island or a city or whatever, but in the middle of it, there'll be a tree fort.
The retail space will be an old-timey general store run by an intrepid pufferfish character who's traveled the world and returned with all sorts of quirky treasures.
And I had this idea that there would be multiple entry points from the store to the tutoring space. So you'll walk in and you'll see a whole wall of doors, like crazy doors in different shapes, circular doors, bacon-shaped doors, oval doors, and crooked doors, to sort of symbolize you're entering a new space. Everybody's different. Whatever door feels right to you, you can go through it. And it all gets you to the same place, which is this happy, safe place.
While construction is going to take almost a year, 826 is quickly becoming part of the neighborhood. They're running an after-school poetry program at DeMariac Academy, and on this day, they've set up a table in front of their soon-to-be storefront during the neighborhood's monthly Four Corner Friday event.
Hi. What are you guys doing here today?
We're here handing out free student publications from our past 13 years of doing work over in the Mission District. Cool. Yeah.
826 plans to open on the corner in late spring. The significance of their arrival is not lost on their co-founder.
It's a fantastic example of how a group of dedicated people can pull together and try to improve their neighborhood at a time when a lot is changing. You just want it to happen tomorrow, though.
Kim Jackson and Mike Anderer, who work nearby, and Captain Jason Chernis couldn't agree more.
All of us really worked at that. We all spent time pitching them and telling them how wonderful they are and how we really want them and need them.
I think that a year from now, you'll see a very different Golden Gate in Leavenworth.
Go to the 800 block of Valencia Street now. It's completely different than when they first moved in there, you know, 10 or 15 years ago when they started.
It's tempting to make that leap, that like Valencia Street, this corner of the Tenderloin might be completely transformed. Right across the street, in the parking lot of the former YMCA, a controversial plan has been approved to build 200 market-rate micro-units. And within two blocks, another 400 market-rate units are in the pipeline. Back outside Brett's Cafe, I meet one of the residents who lives in the lofts upstairs, just the kind of folks the new developments hope to attract.
My name is Jose Cruz. I'm a web developer, and I live in the Tenderloin. I used to live in the financial district, and then I moved away from San Francisco for about 5 months. When I moved back, this was basically the only place I could find that wasn't too expensive. I'm paying under $3,000. There's a lot of other techie people in the building, mostly mid-20s, early 30s. There's a roof deck, an exercise area. There's a barbecue pit also up there. I like the building, but I'm not making like hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's basically enough for me to pay rent, and that's about it. I plan on staying here for a while, but I don't think I really have any sense of pride in the area. It's just another place to live.
A cafe and an art gallery open. A high-profile business moves in. Luxury apartments are built, and old facades are spruced up. Time after time, in neighborhood after neighborhood, we've seen how this story ends, with the displacement of the poor and vulnerable by the wealthier and more secure. But that's not necessarily how this story will end.
I mean, there are real concerns about displacement in the Mission and other neighborhoods, but in the Tenderloin, there's almost no non-fault evictions. There's literally none. So it's a very different situation.
That's Randy Shaw, the director of the Tenderloin Housing Clinic. He has fought on behalf of low-income tenants for decades. He thinks the difference in the Tenderloin is a housing landscape unlike any in this city or most cities.
I always say the gentry like to own. There's few, if any, neighborhoods in the United States that have gentrified without ownership, and there's really not much ownership opportunity. Right now, there's no ownership in the Tenderloin. There's like one condo that converted in 1964.
What's also unique is that at least a quarter of the housing stock in the neighborhood is actually owned by nonprofits that serve the poor, addicted, elderly, and formerly homeless. They're invested in the neighborhood and low-income housing, so they're not going anywhere. And finally, there are thousands of SRO units, small rooms with shared bathrooms, where some of the city's most vulnerable live. These are protected by hard-won city ordinances, which make it illegal to convert, combine, or condoize them. But that doesn't mean some people wouldn't like to. In mid-March, owners of six SROs nearby go before the city's planning commission with a proposal to convert their properties into tourist hotels. If the precedent is set, it could dramatically change who lives here. Randy is confident that the proposal won't be approved and that the neighborhood's future as a home for lower-income people is secure. He believes that decades of work of the many, many neighborhood advocates and activists is finally paying off.
For over 30 years, I have worked in the Tenderloin. It's been a very rocky and turbulent ride at times, but I think we are heading ultimately for a smooth landing.
So what's the goal?
Well, the goals of us who've been around a long time in the Tenderloin really have not changed at all. We've always wanted it to be a neighborhood where people, it's not simply the place where the low-income people, the last place they can afford to live, but a place they desire to live. And when I say a safe landing, we will end up in a neighborhood that doesn't have the crime that is a problem in the public drug dealing, that poor people have not been displaced, that is the mixed-income neighborhood that is a desirable place. So we have low-income people who are saying, great, I'm so happy to be living in the Tenderloin, instead of, well, I'm living in the Tenderloin because I know what else I can afford, which is a different thing.
A few things do seem certain. The corner and the neighborhood are changing. incomes in the neighborhood will become more mixed as new buildings are built and folks move out of their rent-controlled units. What happens after that, really, is anybody's guess. If Randy is correct, I do wonder how the new arrivals will mix with the old-timers. What will a safer, cleaner neighborhood mean to the kids here? What will happen to the addicted and mentally ill who are homeless? Will they still call these streets home? And what about the drug dealers who come from Oakland to make a living? A year later, I still have so many questions. Sadly, my time at this intersection is coming to an end. I cannot thank the folks who live and work here enough for talking with me and sharing your stories. It has been an honor. I'll be heading to another intersection in the Bay Area soon, but I'll be back to Golden Gate and Leavenworth, from now on, without a microphone. Thanks for listening. I'm David Boyer, and this is The Intersection.